Hello, I'm Neil Allen from Hudson, New York. You're listening to WGXE Acra 90.7 FM.
Tuesday, September 22nd, tune into all sorts of special programming on Creative Community Radio, WGXE 90.7 FM. Catskill's Corey McClaskland has the Forgotten Geek Show at 11 a.m. with entertainment news, music from past decades, special features, and more. Then at noon, Rob Saffer has all kinds of new music on his Overlooked Show, live from Ulster County, with new tracks from Halu Mergia from Ethiopia, the Meriden Brothers from Colombia, Takua Kurata from Japan, Song Jin Chu from South Korea, Micaiah McCraven from Chicago, Maria Schneider from New York City on the Overlook Show from noon to 2 p.m. on Tuesday. Then Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda, the movie review show at 7 p.m., previews the Woodstock Film Festival. At 8 p.m. on Mostly Singles, Michael Wilde plays mostly vintage 45s. This week from Laverne Baker, Billy Strange, Buddy Holly, Tony Joe White, and others on the Mostly Singles show just before Dan Seward beams in from somewhere in Columbia County with the Battlefield Earth Show on the radio at WGXE 90.7 FM.
WGXE underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXE is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Endless Garden in Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXE as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXE sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXE.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
This is Tom Rowe with the WGXE local news update. Go to the WGXE newsroom at WGXE.org for more information about any of these stories. Tennessee Crow II reports in the Times Union that citizens around the country mourn the death of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg at rallies September 19th on courthouse steps around the country, including in Albany. Because of the Rosh Hashanah holiday, some communities scheduled their vigils for 7 p.m. September 20th, including Kingston, Woodstock, and Hudson. Governor Andrew Cuomo also lit some state landmarks in blue September 19th in tribute to Ginsburg. Cuomo included the Albany International Airport Gateway, the three Albany buildings, the Alfred E. Smith State Office Building, the H. Carl McCall SUNY Building, and the New York State Education Department Building. Quote, as we mourn the loss of one of America's most prominent and inspiring jurists, New York State will take a moment to celebrate the extraordinary legacy of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and her precedent-shattering contributions to gender equity, civil rights, and jurisprudence, unquote, Cuomo said. Quote, in honor of Justice Ginsburg, I am directing landmarks throughout our state to be lit blue, the color of justice. New Yorkers from all walks of life should reflect on the life of Justice Ginsburg and remember all that she did for our nation as we view these beautifully lit monuments tonight, unquote. Republican Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro also released a statement after her death. Quote, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a remarkable soul, a force of nature, an inspiring woman, and a brilliant mind. Our nation owes her a debt of gratitude, and with strong beliefs, she made an effort to listen and care for those whom she disagreed. Her legacy is the life she led, and her memory will be a blessing. Rest in well-earned peace, unquote, Molinaro wrote. On Twitter, New York State Senator Kirsten Gillibrand wrote, quote, the world has lost a giant, a brilliant jurist, a resolute champion for justice, and a trailblazer for women's rights. Ruth Bader Ginsburg has left a legacy that will echo through history, unquote. Bill Williams is reporting for Columbia Green Media that Chatham Police Chief Peter Volkman has been placed on a 30-day paid administrative leave by the Chatham Village Board, Mayor John Howe said September 19th. The action was taken in an emergency executive meeting held Friday, September 18th, after the village was served with a warrant by state police the day before for police department computer records, Howe said. He was careful to note that investigators confiscated only computers from the police department. The probe is being conducted by state police, the state comptroller's office, and the Columbia County District Attorney's Office, the mayor said. Quote, Volkman's temporary paid leave is an administrative action while the investigation is taking place and should not be perceived as a disciplinary action, unquote, he said. The board will revisit Volkman's administrative leave in 30 days if necessary, Howe said. In a related Facebook post September 19th, Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson said he has accepted Volkman's resignation as police commissioner. Volkman was a Johnson appointee and has served as commissioner since January 2020. Volkman is best known for his work on the Chatham Cares for You program, which supports those addicted to opiates by providing them access to treatment centers without fear of being charged with a criminal offense. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Spectrum News is reporting that New York's plastic bag ban is back on track. The State Department of Environmental Protection has filed a letter with the state Supreme Court to require stores statewide to stop handing out plastic bags beginning October 19th. Although the ban went into effect March 1st, state regulators held off on enforcing the measure for the past few months. A lawsuit was almost immediately filed by plastic bag manufacturers and convenience store owners who said that banning plastic would be a huge blow to their businesses. Last month, the state Supreme Court upheld the bag prohibition. At the same time, it struck down an exception allowing thicker plastic bags. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com. And Sarah Trafton and Bill Williams are reporting for Columbia Green Media that the wooden frame of the Stewart's shop under construction on Bridge Street in Catskill collapsed September 18th, trapping a construction worker in the debris. First responders rescued the man, who sustained non-life-threatening injuries, Catskill Police Lieutenant Ronald Frasello said. The man was on a ladder at the time of the collapse and was struck by a couple of boards when they fell, Catskill Police Chief David Darling said. The unidentified Perez construction worker was taken by Town of Catskill Ambulance to Columbia Memorial Health in Hudson as a precaution, the chief said. The incident caused two-thirds of the wooden frame to fall in. Quote, the trusses came down like dominoes, unquote, Village Code Enforcement Officer Michael Reggiani said. The cause of the accident is under investigation, Stewart's Shop spokesperson Erica Komaros said. Reggiani said the collapse will put construction temporarily on hold. Komaroski estimates the delay would be at least 10 days. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts Sunday should start off mostly cloudy and then there will be gradual clearing throughout the day with a high of just 56 and a low Sunday night around 35. Frost is possible. Monday should be sunny with a high of 60 and a low around 39, and Tuesday should be a bit warmer with a high of 64, sunny skies, and a low around 50. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears. Tune in WGXC's new Sunday morning schedule with the Reverend Kim Singletary and There's a Bright Side Somewhere every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. That's followed by the teens from Hudson talking about books they've read on Bound by Books after the local news at 9 a.m. And at 10 a.m., there's more teens. The Catskill kids from Clubhouse Radio are on at 10 a.m. with lots of music and talk on your community radio station, WGXC.org, 90.7 FM.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Jim McCabe of New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You know, I was listening to the radio, and I heard this thing!
90.7 FM. Listener-aided and abetted radio.
Hey! Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I, together with my youth co-hosts, Amelia, Mashuda, Fahim, Lena, AJ, and Fatia, we talk about books every week on WGXC. And due to the Labor Day holiday, we were not able to record together this week, but Mashuda and Fatia, who had not been able to join us for a couple weeks, sent some recordings, and so we're going to share those with you today, along with some music and poems that we like. So we hope you enjoy, and have a good week.
Eight balloons. Eight balloons. No one was buying. All broke loose one afternoon. Eight balloons with strings a-flying, free to do what they wanted to. One flew up to touch the sun. One thought the highway might be fun. One took a nap in a cactus pile. One stayed to play with a careless child. One tried to taste some bacon frying. One fell in love with a porcupine. Ooh, one looked close in a crocodile's mouth. One sat around till his air went out. Eight balloons, no one was buying. They broke loose and away they flew, free to float and free to fly and free to where they wanted to.
Hi, my name is Fatia and I'm 6 years old and I'm also from Hudson. Today we're going to read a book that is Cookie and Barkley Going to School. Cookie and Barkley were going to school. At number one, they were going to school today. The Barkley was very angry. The cookie was very sad. The cookie was very happy. And then they fighted and they did this and then got angry. Why was that cookie happy? Cookie likes school so much. And the Barkley hates school so, so much. And then they made a shadow. And the cookie said, yes, 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 yes. The Barkley said, no, 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 no. They got best friends forever again. Paint wall. They're going to get bit by the red skeleton, red hot, green. And then they fight punched it. got angry so much.
Cookie and Barkley got me. Tomato, the friend, was very tiny. He was a little tiny people. And then the Barkley and the tomato talks to the Barkley. Cookie and the Barkley's opposite of each other. And then the cookie said, yes. And the Barkley said, no. Paint wall. And then the fire came. It was a drum the kids made. Broccoli and Cookie made the drum. They had so much fun together. The Barkley yelled, "Where is room 5? The set them. They go to room 5, and then room 5 said, "Ah!" The teacher said, "Don't disturb my class." And then Abby 1 was there. Cookie and Box was found room 5. They all had fun together. Cookie was very angry at the Barkley. The Barkley was very angry at the Cookie. But still they were friends. The Cookie was very happy. The Barkley was very angry. They still continued the journey. And they have so much fun together. The end. Was that good?
Hello, my name is Mashuda, and I'm 18 years old, and I'm from Hudson. I hope you're all doing good and staying healthy and well. My book is Sanctuary by Paola Mendoza and Abby Scher. It's 2032, and in this near future America, all citizens are chipped and everyone is tracked, from buses to grocery stores. It's almost impossible to survive as an undocumented immigrant. And that's exactly what 16-year-old Vali is doing. She and her family have carved out of a stable, happy life in small-town Vermont. But when Vali's mother, counterfeit Chip, starts malfunctioning and the deportation forces raid their town and they're forced to flee. Now on the run, Vali and her family are desperately trying to make it to her Tia Luna's California, a sanctuary state that is currently being walled off from the rest of the country. But when Vali's mother is detained, before their journey even really begins, Vali must carry on with her younger brother across the country to make it to safety before it's too late. Gripping and Arjun co-authors Paola Mendoza and Abby sure have crafted a narrative that is as haunting as it's hopeful and envisioning a future where everyone can find sanctuary. This is really compelling, visually compelling book so far, and I'm really enjoying reading it. So you guys should check it out. The book is Sanctuary, Paola Mendoza and Abby Scher. I'm really excited for the actual published version, and I'm going to read that version again. Yep, thank you.
Listen to the mustn'ts, child. Listen to the don'ts. Listen to the shouldn'ts, the impossibles, the won'ts. Listen to the never haves. Then listen close to me. Anything can happen, child. Anything can be.
Hello, everyone. My name is Mashuda. I'm 18 years old, and I'm from Hudson. I've been reading the book called Feed by Matthew Tobin Anderson. It's a novel, a dystopian novel, a science fiction, and mixed with young adult fiction. Feed is a young adult dystopian novel of the cyberpunk subgenre written by M.T. Anderson. The novel focuses on issues such as corporate power, consumerism, information technology, data mining, and environmental decay, with sometimes sardonic, sometimes somber tone. Feed is placed in future tense, which has an explanation and importance of the danger of technology and internet. It has a lot of similarities and explanation of what's going now, this our times, 2020. And, you know, it teaches us how we humans are so relied on technology that we lack of critical thinking. We can't solve problems by ourselves. We are always visiting or searching on Google or any other internet web page to get answers. In Feed, it talks about normal teenagers. It's an everyday thing for them to visit Moon, and when they don't, visit Moon when they don't have school. It's an everyday thing, and they visit there, they hang out together with their friends, and they come back. And when they come back to this earth, they're partying all the time besides studying. And it shows that how advanced technology is, that those normal teenagers who are, how teenagers are supposed to be immature, those normal immature teenagers can just use technology and visit any planet they want. But still, there is disease that's damaging and hurting and killing all those people. This simple disease is called whipping sores. Even when the technology is so advanced, then why are this simple small disease like whipping sore harming those people? The answer is because the technology doesn't have answer. They can't just go and search the solution on Google, say, what's the side effect of whipping sore, or how can I prevent whipping sore? And they can't just rely on internet because the internet doesn't know. Technology is not better than a human brain, because a human brain created those technologies. So since they don't have any knowledge to use it, they don't have any critical thinking and problem-solving skill, they can't solve this simple thing. And in this feed, it shows that it's a world full of teenagers. And you know how they're using slang, they're immature. That's why they can't solve this simple problem. But the only teenager that's smart is Violet. Violet is a nerd, and she knows a lot of the answers because she's an outcast. She doesn't hang out with the other teenagers that consider normal in their times, like acting dumb, partying, not doing their homework, not doing their schoolwork, just partying and going to Moon and hanging out and saying silly stuff. They can't even spell. Those teenagers can't even spell or read, and they need translation for normal English. They can't do anything without internet. But Violet herself, she can read books because she's an outcast. She doesn't hang out with them. So this book does a really good job of danger of relying on internet too much. And it also scares me a little bit because, nowadays people are putting credit card chip on their hand, under their hand, like inside their hand skin, and to prevent theft, credit card theft. But still, it's scary how you could use technology inside you. So this book is really good, and if you guys want, you can check it out. The book is called Feed by M.T. Anderson or Matthew Tower Anderson. Thank you.
If the world was crazy, you know what I'd eat? Big slice of soup, whole quarter meat, lemonade sandwich. Then I might try some roasted ice cream or bicycle pie. A nice notebook salad or some underwear roast. An omelette of hats and some crispy cardboard toast. A thick malted milk made from pencils and daisies. And that's what I'd eat if the world was crazy. If the world was crazy, you know what I'd wear? A chocolate suit and a tie of eclair. Some marshmallow earmuffs, some licorice shoes. And I'd read a paper of peppermint news. I'd call the boys Susie. I'd call the girls Harry. I'd talk through my ears, and I always would carry a paper umbrella for when it grew hazy to keep in the rain. If the world was crazy. If the world was crazy, you know what I'd do? I'd walk on the ocean and swim in my shoe. I'd fly through the ground and I'd skip down the air. I'd run down the bathtub and bathe on the stair. When I'd meet somebody, I'd say, "Goodbye, Joe." And when I was leaving, then I'd say, "Hello." And the greatest of men would be silly and lazy. So I would be king if the world was crazy.
Hi, I'm Fatia, and I'm 6 years old, and I'm from Hudson, and today I'm reading about Q and U hanging up together. They are having so much fun. They hang up together as well. Best friends forever. They quack together and squeal together at the square, squeeze together at the bus. They find the coin together. They look at the queen together. They study together. They be sad when it's quiz. They earthquake together. They don't leave their self behind. They're always together. Because they're best friends. And thanks for listening to what I was reading to this book, Q and U. I hope you read it too. Can you please read it? You have to find it at the Chromebook, readingkidsaz.com. You go there and find this book, Q and U, Best Friends by Karen Markler. Thank you. And bye.
Yeah! Yeah! Teacher, teacher, I beg you ring the bell. Teach your children, teach them how to spell. R-A-T, rat.
R-A-T,
meow, meow.
That's right.
C-A-T, cat. Look at that, look at that. You got to learn that.
What is the census? As mandated by the U.S. Constitution, the census is a once every decade count of everyone living in the country. When we know how many people live in our community, organizations and businesses are better equipped to evaluate the services and programs needed, such as clinics, schools, and roads. The census also determines how seats in Congress are distributed among the 50 states. In March of 2020, the U.S. Census Bureau sent every household an invitation to complete a simple questionnaire about who lives at your address on April 1st. You can respond online, by phone, or by mail. And federal law keeps those responses safe and secure. Shape your future. Visit 2020census.gov.
Zebra question. I asked the zebra, "Are you black with white stripes or white with black stripes?" And the zebra asked me, "Are you good with bad habits or are you bad with good habits? Are you noisy with quiet times, or are you quiet with noisy times? Are you happy with some sad days, or are you sad with some happy days? Are you neat with some sloppy ways, or are you sloppy with some neat ways?" And on and on and on and on and on and on he went. I'll never ask a zebra about stripes again.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We hope you have a good week with lots of quality reading time. Happy reading.
So yes, we're starting the National Commission on Patriotic Education, okay? We're going to get rid of the fake history. We're calling it the 1776 Commission, okay? Because that's when our great country started. Not any other dates that people want to put out there. And believe me, we're going to have such strong education, such great sort of learning. The learning that, you know, kids want to learn. They want to do great learning. Our teachers, some of these are great people. They want to do great teaching. That's when you teach, you do the teaching. But we're not going to have any fake history. So we're going to learn about slavery. We're going to learn the real story about slavery. Every day after the national anthem, and you're going to stand for it so fast, and after daily prayer, okay, we will play Britney Spears' I'm a Slave for You, all our schools. And that will teach you sort of an important lesson about slavery, okay? It's not all bad. You know, you can have sort of a sexy dance with a snake that's very sort of historical because it happened many years ago. She's old now, but that was when she was sort of on that, you know, how old is she? I want to make sure before I invite her to a party. So you get it. And history books are going to still be great history books, but we're going to replace all the sort of fake history with the Bill O'Reilly killing series. You're going to learn such great history from that. So those will be the textbooks. And there won't be, excuse me, no 1619 project. I bet you want that, don't you? You want that. But we're done talking about the 1619 project. It's total fake history. Instead, every school that wants federal funds, okay, you want I'll take them so fast your head would spin. But if they want our great, strong federal funds, every history department has to have a 16 to 19 project dedicated to Jeff Epstein, my great friend, who was so big into the, you know, that was the original 1619 project. He would say, get me some 16-year-olds who maybe look like they're 19 so nobody gets suspicious. So every history department has to have a Jeff Epstein chair, okay, where a guy sits and gets 16-year-olds to sort of be nice to him, okay? So we'll see what happens.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Jennifer, thanks for joining me. It's been a while. I think we talked at the beginning of the pandemic when there was a rush of executive orders around voting rights, but it's been a long time.
It has, and a lot has changed since we first spoke.
Well, I'm interested in hearing about it, and I'm sure our listeners are too. We've got an election coming in about a little under 50 days now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of questions that people have about what voting is going to look like in New York come November 3rd. Tell us what you know.
Voters will actually have three ways to vote this year. So for a lot of people, this might be their first time taking advantage of early voting, which we only got early voting last year in 2019. So we'll have 9 days of early voting. We'll have our election day voting as well on November 3rd. And then also this year, we've expanded absentee voting so that any voter who wants to vote by absentee can do so by requesting an absentee ballot and marking temporary illness, which has been expanded to now include fear of COVID.
That's fantastic. Is it too late for people to register to vote at this point?
Nope, there's still a little bit of time to register. The deadline's October 9th. But the problem that we've heard a lot of people facing is that the ways to register to vote in New York State are kind of limited. So, of course, you can do a paper registration form that you would fill out and send to your county board of elections. But our online options are limited only to the DMV. So you can only register online through mydmv.ny.gov if you have a valid, up-to-date driver's license or New York State ID.
And so anyone with a driver's license can jump on the DMV website and register online.
Yes, as long as their license is up to date and it's right at the top of the page on the right side, there is a link for registering to vote.
Now, people might want to do that instead of going to get a physical application because, what, distrust of the Postal Service at this point? How long it's taking for the mail to, you know, get to its destination and come back? What are some of the reasons why you might not want to do a paper registration form?
I think the biggest barrier is probably getting your hands on a paper registration form right now. Usually the League and a lot of other voting rights groups have been out the entire summer. We've, you know, started in the fall back up again as students return to campuses, getting everyone registered that we can. And this year we've been really, really limited in doing that. And not just the League, but all groups that engage in registering voters have been extremely limited in what they can do. So getting your hands on a paper registration form may well be the hardest part of doing it via paper rather than doing it through the DMV. We are sending them out from our office. We get quite a few requests every day, and we do send out those paper forms to people. But yes, I think the concern for the timing with regard to the USPS is a concern as well. But you can always drop those forms off in person at your County Board of Elections office. And you can even go into your County Board of Elections office and fill it out and hand it in person as well.
Is there anything to fear from filling out a physical registration form and mailing it in? So, for example, say you mail it in the next couple of weeks and you don't hear anything back. Can you still go to your polling place and vote?
Yes, we always tell people that if you did send in a voter registration form, whether it was through the DMV or a paper form, you can always go vote in person and do what's called either an affidavit ballot or provisional ballot. They're essentially the same things. Poll workers just call them one of those two phrases. So we always tell voters, you know, if you go to your regular polling site and you're not in the book, request an affidavit or provisional ballot, you'll be able to fill that out and then follow up after the fact to make sure that it's counted with your County Board of Elections. And essentially what the County Board of Elections does is just check and see if they have your file anywhere. They go through any voter registration forms that maybe they got in a little bit late after the deadline. And then, like we always say, make sure that you do follow up, because they won't tell you if they don't count your ballot.
Well, that leads me to the question of, if you're not getting anything back from the Board of Elections, you might not know where your polling site is. Can you tell our listeners how they can find out where to go and vote if they wake up on election day and think, I don't know where my polling place is?
Yeah, so the Board of Elections website, which is elections.ny.gov, has a link right at the center of the page that is for the voter lookup tool. And I think it says something like find my polling place or see if I'm registered to vote. It's all the same database of information that will tell you where you can go to vote. And they've also recently started updating it to include early voting poll sites as well. So if you use that tool over the next couple of weeks, they're adding early voting poll sites to there. So if you look on there during the early voting period, you can see what your early voting poll site options are too.
I'm going to come back to early voting in a moment, but the League also has a website where folks can check not only where their polling place is, but who's up for election.
We do, and it is going live in just a couple of days with candidates for president, congressional candidates, state senate, state assembly, judicial candidates, and we'll also have some local DA races and other local races on there as well. And our go live date is the 21st of September, and I'm very excited to be done with this project because we have over like 500 candidates on the site this year because we have so many different offices in New York State that are up for election.
For the Capital Region, is it fair to ask you what some of the hot races are?
Our district attorney race happening in Albany. Of course, the congressional races are always exciting to watch those. And Assembly and Senate seats, they're all up. I think the biggest, hottest one right now is the DA races that are happening around the state, especially because of the Black Lives Matter movement kind of putting more focus on the importance of reforming the criminal justice system. And that really does start directly with our DAs and with our judges. So that's definitely the race to watch. And usually it's kind of hard to get information about DAs and judges. So definitely check out vote411.org if you're interested in reading more about the positions of those candidates.
And you have information about candidates' positions. Now, the League is nonpartisan. How do you get information about what the positions of some of these candidates are?
We directly contact each of the candidates through email. Not every candidate responds, unfortunately, but we do try at the very least to include links to that candidate's Facebook account, their Twitter page, their campaign website. So even if the candidate doesn't respond, there is options to find more information about them. But it's completely up to the candidate whether or not they're going to participate. But yes, everything comes straight from the candidate's mouths.
So back to early voting. Last year was the first year that we had early voting in New York. And I know that for me, I live in Rensselaer County. I live in Lansingburg. And there was a lot of controversy over the fact that there were few early voting sites and they were pretty far away from downtown Troy. What can you tell us about improvements that have been made to early voting sites this time around?
So there will be a Troy site this year, which we're very pleased about because, yes, we were very dismayed that there was no site in Troy last year, but there is one this year. But some counties have added more sites. Something exciting that happened in Albany County was that now any voter can go to any early voting site, whereas last year in 2019, the sites were assigned for early voting, so you had to know your election district and ward, and it was just very confusing. So now in Albany, you can go to any site. Also, some of the sites have changed because they had to follow the new COVID protocols to have a certain amount of space between the machines and a certain amount of space within the facility itself so that they could accommodate enough people while they were having early voting but still have social distancing. So make sure that you do check your early voting site before that you decide to go and vote early. And if you do want to vote by absentee ballot, make sure you do get your request in now. The state just created an online portal, so any New York State voter, regardless of your county, can apply for an absentee ballot online. And that website is absenteeballot.elections, as in multiple elections, .ny.gov, and it's super easy. It takes less than 2 minutes to apply for your absentee ballot. You can also say if you want it sent to another address. That's like the second question they ask is, where do you want this ballot sent? And those ballots are going to be going out pretty soon. Definitely get your request in now so that you can get your ballot as early as possible and get it back as quick as possible. And also remember, if you don't want to put it in the mail, if you're worried about mailing it back, you can drop it off at any early voting or election day poll site, and one of the governor's new executive orders mandates that there be a special line for people who are just going in to drop off their ballot. So you're not going to have to wait in the main line. You'll be able to just walk right up, drop off your ballot either in some sort of box or bag, and know that your ballot is going to be counted and be secure.
If I apply for an absentee ballot and then I change my mind and I actually want to go and vote in person, because that's always exciting, can I not?
Yes, New York State is one of the few states that allows voters to do that. And in New York State, we have a really thorough procedure of vetting all of the absentee ballots to make sure people didn't vote twice. And what the county boards of elections essentially do is that at the end of the election, they compare the absentee ballots they have to the signatures in the poll book to make sure that no one didn't vote in person and vote by absentee ballot. And if you did vote in person, they just invalidate your absentee ballot and count your in-person ballot.
Jennifer, thank you so much for running this down for us, and I'm sure we'll ask you to come back just before the election to give us the most updated information.
Sounds great.
We're talking with Bruce Roeder, who is the head of the Museum of Political Corruption. We've had Bruce on before to talk about their Nellie Bly Award, and they're going to be having a virtual event September 24th to honor this year's recipient. But Bruce, why don't we just start off with what is the Museum of Political Corruption and why in Albany?
Thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure to be on. Well, the Museum of Political Corruption is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to educating and empowering the public to improve their government. We really believe that if we're going to own the future, first we've got to own the past. So that's why we believe education is so important. We don't have a physical location yet. We do plan on having one sometime in the future. Why Albany? It's hardly that we need to ask that question. Albany has had more than its share of political corruption. It has, in fact, a rich history of political corruption, and we believe that if we can study it, and learn from it. It can apply to politics anywhere in the state or in the country.
So who is your Nellie Bly Award, and maybe she award recipient this year? And for those people who may not know, remember who Nellie Bly was, why do you call this award the Nellie Bly Award?
Well, Nellie Bly was an amazing 19th century pioneering journalist. She really helped start this entire field of investigative journalism. She's probably best known for the expose she did on the Blackwell's Island Insane Asylum in New York, where she went undercover and posed as a patient. But we were particularly inspired by her story of when she came up to Albany, because she heard there was corruption and she heard you could buy off the New York legislature to pass or kill any bill. So she put it to the test. She came here undercover, posing as a lobbyist. And in fact, she was able to have a bill killed, all for the price of $1,250. And I suppose the New York State legislature costs more these days, but that's what it was back then. And that's why we named the award after her.
And this year's recipient?
Yes, this year's recipient is Jane Mayer, the chief Washington correspondent for the New Yorker magazine. She's a fabulous choice. She's our fourth annual recipient of this award, and she herself has been a pioneer in the field. She's done tremendous work, especially with regard to the role that that dark money plays in our politics. And I encourage all of your listeners to go out and get one or more of her books, because it's really eye-opening.
Can you explain a little bit what you mean by the phrase, you know, dark money? And is that possibly playing any role in the, 2020 elections?
I'm sure it is. It's this undercurrent where billionaires have been funding what seem to be, on the surface, innocuous think tanks of various sorts. But really, all of these groups merely are intended to serve the special interests of the wealthiest of the wealthy here in this country, particularly with regard to, say, the energy industry, the coal industry, for instance. Mayer focuses a lot on the Koch brothers, for instance, but there are other actors as well.
Mm. And I also understand you actually did have an exhibit here in the Capital District for the museum, that unfortunately was impacted by the COVID crisis?
Yes, it was. We opened up a wonderful exhibit in spring called First Responders for Democracy, where we focus on what individuals can do to improve their government, everything from being journalists to being whistleblowers. For that exhibit, we partnered with the Albany Firefighters Museum, and it was really wonderful of them. We had a great opening. Congressman Tonko was there along with others. And then, yes, 2 weeks later, because of the COVID pandemic, we had to close down. And that's been one other reason why we have pursued an alternate route of creating a virtual museum before we go to a bricks and mortar museum.
So what will your virtual event on September 24th be like?
Well, it'll be wonderful. Jane Mayer will be there. She will be interviewed by WAMC's Joe Donahue. We actually have a bit of a surprise for her. We put together a video in tribute to her. And there are some very special people who make appearances in that video. We won't go any further now. But it will be a wonderful surprise for Jane. But I know that she wants to do a very robust question and answer period with viewers. I think she's really interested in what the public has to ask her and how she can respond to that. So we're really looking forward to this event.
And stepping back a little bit to the exhibit, did any of our esteemed, you know, lawmakers, governor, attorney general, stop by to get some education when you had the exhibit open?
Well, that would be wonderful. I don't know that any of them did. As I said, Congressman Tonko was there. There was also a representative from the League of Women Voters was there. It was a good exhibit, and we hope it will open again right after the pandemic. And we do want to educate our leaders as well. This isn't just for the public. We want to be a resource to our state leaders as well.
Now, you know, are there any other, you know, similar museums of political corruption elsewhere in the country, or you sort of an initial trailblazer on this?
I believe we are a trailblazer. I don't believe there's another museum quite like this in the world. As a matter of fact, Mark, I've received communication from other municipalities in the country saying, we want this museum there, say in Chicago or in some other city. And I kindly respond back that say, well, we're going to open this up in Albany first, and then we'll franchise. Because I really want Albany to be a leader in ethical governance, and that's what this museum represents. It represents a education and a new path forward.
Now, you know, you mentioned it's in Albany, and I always remember the movie Lincoln, where, you know, Lincoln's trying to twist the arms of Congress to get something done, and he tells his staff, you know, go find me two Albany lobbyists to take care of this. They'll know how to, you know, by the Congress member. And certainly in the last year, you know, Shelley Silver, former Assembly Speaker, just started his visit in prison, and a number of the top Cuomo staff have been convicted in the last year or so of political corruption. Do you have any sense that, you know, is corruption getting worse or better at the state capitol in recent years?
Mark, I believe it ebbs and flows. I think it's always there under the surface. And the reason for that is just because of the amount of money that flows through New York and flows through Albany. And that type of money builds real temptation. And there is an underlying culture of power and pressure, which also leads to corruption as well. And it's nothing that is ever going to go completely away, but it's something like having a chronic illness, for instance, that is manageable, and we can manage it.
Okay. So we've been talking with Bruce Roeder about the September 24th virtual event for the Museum of Political Corruption. Bruce, you know, the webpage, how do people sign up for the virtual event?
Yes, absolutely. If you're interested in registering for this Nellie Bly Awards ceremony, it's going to be a wonderful opportunity to hear Jane Mayer speak. Do visit our website, which is www.museumofpoliticalcorruption.org.
Well, thank you, Bruce. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about